The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with a health section, which is the bitter truth about sugar and sugar substitutes. It's no secret that Americans have a serious addiction. Here's how to cut back on all the sweet stuff once and for all. You're probably aware that the frothy coffee drink and bakery scone is loaded with sugar. But did you know that the startling amounts of added sugar are also lurking in your breakfast cereal, dairy-free milk, alternative, and even takeout fried chicken? Americans are simply consuming too much sugar, says Frank Yu, professor of nutrition at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. Most people consume three times the recommended daily limit of sugar, and it's not just a harmless habit. The research has been very consistent, and the findings quite convincing, that eating too much sugar can lead to a wide range of adverse health effects. Even if you've gotten the message that too much sugar isn't good for your health, and are taking steps to cut back, like switching to low-sugar baked goods and diet soda, you haven't solved the issue, and you may have created a new problem. Since the 1990s, aspartame has been widely used as a sugar substitute in products such as diet drinks, yogurt, and breakfast cereal. But the sweetener has come under scrutiny following a July 2023 statement from the International Agency for Research on Cancer, a division of the World Health Organization, that officially classified aspartame as a possible carcinogenic to humans. So, what's the answer? We need to rethink our relationship with the sweet stuff. The problem with sugar. For the most part, sugars that naturally occur in an apple, a sweet potato, or a glass of milk aren't an issue. It's the sugar introduced in the manufacturing of jarred pasta sauce, or the preparation of a muffin, or when you stir a spoonful of sugar into your coffee, for example, that's harming your health. When you eat or drink something with added sugar, your body breaks it down through your saliva. Then the glucose gets absorbed into your bloodstream, spiking your blood sugar and triggering your pancreas to release insulin. On the other hand, when you munch on a bowl of fresh berries, the whole fruit contains fiber and other compounds that slows how quickly the sugar is digested, so your blood sugar doesn't spike the same way. You probably notice some of the pleasant side effects of too much added sugar, which can range from headaches to brain fog, but it also takes a toll on our long-term health. Too much added sugar has been shown to have a tremendous negative effect on heart health, says Brooke Agarwal, an assistant professor of medical sciences in the cardiology division at Columbia University Irving Medical Center in New York City. It can promote inflammation, which causes stress on blood vessels and the heart itself, she says. Other effects include weight gain, obesity, fatty liver disease, tooth decay, and even some cancers. A large review recently published in the British Medical Journal found 45 negative health effects of added sugar, which even included asthma and depression. That's why the U.S. dietary guidelines suggest limiting calories from added sugar to less than 10% of your total caloric intake per day. And the American Heart Association recommends eating no more than 6 teaspoons, 25 grams, of sugar per day for women, and 9 teaspoons, 38 grams, for men. For reference, that's roughly the equivalent of one chocolate chip cookie and a low-fat yogurt. That low threshold is a shock to many Americans. I speak with adults on the verge of lifestyle diseases such as diabetes or cardiovascular disease who were never taught how to read a nutrition facts label, says Nicole Avina, an assistant professor of neuroscience at the Icahn School of Medicine in Mount Sinai, New York City, author of Sugarless, and a leading expert on sugar addiction. Lots of people simply did not know how many hidden sugars they consumed throughout the day. And when they are told they need to cut back, she adds, they are at a loss about how to start. Substitutes are not the solution. In an effort to continue to eat foods we enjoy while avoiding excess sugar, many Americans have switched to alternative sweeteners and so-called natural sugars. Maple syrup, coconut sugar, and honey may have the halo effect of health food, but they're really no better for us. It's true that they do contain some minerals and vitamins, but they are not very different from table sugar and should also be used in moderation. Artificial sweeteners used to be recommended for people trying to lose weight or to keep it off, but that practice too has recently come under scrutiny. Last spring, following a systematic review, the World Health Organization advised against using artificial sweeteners as part of a weight loss plan, since they have not been found to reduce body fat in the long term. The data suggests that the use of these products has little impact on the obesity epidemic, says Linda Van Horn, professor emeritus of preventive medicine at Northwestern University's Fine Food School of Medicine. Consuming artificial sweeteners might even prompt us to eat more. Artificial sweeteners do have a place for people who have certain health conditions, such as diabetes, says Yu. And the Food and Drug Administration maintains that aspartame is safe when consumed within its recommendation for an acceptable daily intake of 50 milligrams per kilogram of body weight daily. To put it in perspective, a person weighing 154 pounds would need to drink more than 17 cans of soda a day to exceed that limit. Still, many health and nutrition experts recommend using caution. Other sweeteners, such as sucralose, may be problematic too. Past research has linked them to high blood pressure and cardiovascular diseases. Plus, we don't know what long-term effects of any artificial sweeteners will be on children, says Yu. Possible health effects aside, the other issue with leaning on artificially sweetened foods is that they still feed your sweet tooth. As a society, our palates have been trained to want sweet, to want to hit that bliss point at every meal, says Stephanie McBurnett, a registered dietitian and nutrition educator with the Physicians Commission on Responsible Medicine. That is a big part of our problem. Why are you eating more sugar than you think? If it tastes sweet, it has sugar in it, says McBurnett, or it contains an artificial sweetener. The trickier place of the puzzle is that even if something doesn't taste sweet, it can still contain sweeteners. And if it comes from a coffee shop or a fast food restaurant, or if it has a label on it, it probably has some kind of sugar in it, such as sucrose, brown rice syrup, or a high fructose corn syrup. Sugar is added to mask the off-putting taste of some of the other ingredients, like dyes and preservatives, says Zavina. Sugar can also be added to extend the shelf life and enhance the texture of processed foods like peanut butter and hamburger buns, she says. That's why it's found in so many savory processed foods that we don't think of as inherently sweet. Will we eat less sugar, less added sugar, if it costs more? Another place where sugar is hidden in plain sight is in drinks, including juices, sodas, and smoothies. Sugary beverages account for almost half of the added sugar in the U.S. diet. More than 40 countries and cities around the world, including Finland, France, and a number of U.S. cities, have introduced a tax on sugar-sweetened beverages to discourage people from buying them. So far, it seems to be working. A new journal study in the JAMA Health Forum found that sales of sugary drinks in five cities, Boulder, Colorado, Oakland, California, and Philadelphia, San Francisco, and Seattle, fell by 33% after they implemented a soda tax. The American Academy of Pediatrics, American Heart Association, WHO, and other agencies have called for a national tax. Naturally, the American Beverage Association is opposed. Some experts advocate for a broader approach, including higher taxes on all products with added sugars, educational programs, limit on advertising to children, and better product labeling. Whatever we can do from a public health standpoint is positive. Kicking the habit for good. Ultimately, we all need a total sweetness rest in everything we consume. What I advocate is making small changes in your behaviors and reducing the amount of sugar in your system diet systemically, says Avina. Doing this slowly over time is the best approach for avoiding withdrawal symptoms, which are very real. Sugar has been compared to cocaine in some research studies, says Avina, and people who go corky may experience headaches, nausea, irritability, anxiety, and intense cravings. The good news is that any side effects will wear off after a few days, and within a few weeks, a person's taste bud will be more sensitive to sweet flavors again. That means you won't need to add as much sugar to your tea, for example, to taste a kick of sweetness. Follow these expert-approved tips to help you get on the right track. Do avoid processed foods. Research on ultra-processed food has linked everything from hot dogs, muffins, potato chips, and frozen entrees to negative health outcomes ranging from dementia to heart disease and even premature deaths. Avoiding processed foods and choosing plant-based foods along with lean meats, poultry, fish, seafood, nuts, and dairy foods can reduce the risk for obesity and chronic diseases while improving the nutritional quality and health status. Ultra-processed foods tend to be items that include 10 or more ingredients, often with some you can't find in your kitchen and with names you may not recognize. Instead, opt for whole foods you can prepare at home. Don't underestimate the power of a smart swap. You can substitute mashed banana or applesauce for sugar in many baking recipes. Switch store-bought bottled salad dressing for a homemade version, and reach for sparkly water with a slice of lemon instead of sugar-sweetened bottled lemonade, for example. If you get a creative, the options are endless. Do read your food labels. It's important to read ingredient lists and watch for often used synonyms when it's scanning the box of energy bars or breakfast cereal. There are 50-plus names for sugar, and then there are the artificial sweeteners, says McBurnett. It can get very confusing. As a general rule, it's an ingredient that ends in O-S-E. It's sugar. And when you're scanning the nutrition facts panel, a daily value DV of added sugar is that it's 5% or less is considered a low source of added sugar, while a DV of 20% or more is high. Another tip, be sure to read the entire label. Some products combine regular sugars and substitutes, and an artificial sweetener at the end of the ingredient list can go unnoticed. Don't avoid everything sweet. Naturally occurring sugars in milk, fruits, and vegetables such as sweet potatoes and carrots are nutritious and support of a well-balanced diet. I make a point of not demonizing sugar in general, says McBurnett. All this isn't to say that you must vow to never again enjoy another slice of birthday cake or an ice cold fountain drink at the movie theater. Your goal doesn't have to be going sugar-free. Maybe you just want to get to a point where you feel you're at a comfortable level of consumption, like you're in control, says Avina. But over time, consuming less added sugar and sugar substitutes is bound to make your life a whole lot sweeter. That can't all be Ken. Yes, Barbie gave us unrealistic body standards, but she also gave us unrealistic expectations about boyfriends being willing to wear matching neon outfits with you. Drama in real life. Rousted out of bed by strangers, a man endures a terrifying odyssey. You call that a kidnapping? Hang on a second. Got pages stuck together here. Friday, September 11th, 2020. The young man, M, has just entered a bedroom of a $2 million house in Birmingham, Alabama, where an older man, E, is asleep. M, sir, hello. Why are you in my house, sir? What? What are you doing here? You scared me. Are you supposed to be here? Yes, I live here. No, sir, I bought this house and everything in it 2 months ago. Who are you? I am Elton Stevens. I am renting this house. Elton B. Stevens, Jr., to be exact. He is 75 years old, 6 feet tall, 180 pounds, gray hair, blue eyes. He is 14 years retired as a manager of the real estate division of EBSCO Industries, Incorporated, a privately held international conglomerate started by his father. Elton has been separated from his second wife for a year, and for that year he has rented the house in dispute from a friend of his, referred to hereafter as Mr. B., while his new house is being finished. I should mention that I know Elton. He has always had a Dysonian lean toward partying, fast cars, good food, and pretty ladies. He has an enduring grin, a deep South drawl, and not a shred of pretense at a sweet soul. He also has sleep apnea. Every night when he goes to bed, he pulls up an app on his phone called SnoreLab that records his snoring and breathing overnight, along with any other sounds mirrored nearby, such as the Kafkaesque nightmare he finds himself waking up to this morning. E, so what now? M, you tell me. E, buddy, you are scaring me. M, I'm not trying to scare you, bud. If I was trying to scare you, I would scare you. E, I would like to get in my car and leave, please. M, no, we got to figure out why the hell I'm in a whole house here. E, is this a robbery? M, absolutely not, sir. Do I look like a robber? E, yes. M, I do? E, no, you don't look like a robber. I don't mean that. Can we go to the living room, please? M, are you going to be copacetic in front of my fiancée and her kids? If you make them feel out of place, I will hurt you. M picks up Elton's phone from the bedside table, puts it in his pocket, where it continues to record for a number of 2 hours. Elton gets out of bed in his pajamas, and they go to the living room. M, baby, 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 say hi to Mr. Elton. T, hey, how are you? T, is Tabitha Nicole Hodges, 31, 5'5", 130 pounds, brown hair, a severe mouth, lynx eyes, a number of traffic violation, and arrest for unlawful manufacturing of a controlled substance. With her on a sofa are two children, a boy 13 and a girl 11. They all stand and nod at Elton, who says to M, you have a nice family. M is Matthew Amos Burke, 34, 5'7", 170 pounds, Brown hair, blue eyes, he has a wrestler's neck, beefy tattooed arms, and put-upon set to his features. In the past decade, he has been arrested multiple times on charges including unlawful possession of all kinds of drugs, carrying a pistol without a permit, and trafficking methamphetamine, for the last of which he has just completed a 3-year jail sentence and is currently out on probation. Matthew and Tabitha arrived at Mr. B's house more than 5 hours ago at around 2 a.m. They forced open a door to let themselves in and like what they saw. Parked outside in the driveway were Elton's 2012 Toyota Tacoma pickup and two of the 17 luxury cars he collects, a 1971 Mercedes-Benz 280 SL, and a 2012 Maserati sedan. So pleased were Matthew and Tabitha with Mr. B home that they took the keys to the Maserati from the kitchen table, drove the 45 minutes back to their trailer in Renap, Alabama, woke up the two kids to show them their new car, and brought them back to the house. After they returned to Mr. B's house at 7 a.m., the family admired the floor-to-ceiling windows, the artwork, the classic Triumph motorcycle on show in the living room. They also helped themselves to items belonging to Elton, a camera, some credit and debit cards from his wallet, an Italian shotgun they found in his closet, a Derringer and a 1945 long-barrel Smith & Wesson revolver from his bedside table, 10 or 12 high-end watches from another of Elton's collection, and a Yeti cooler to carry all the loot. So what did these people think they were doing? The only possible answer is, who knows? Elton believes that someone must have told Matthew about that splitted house and the elderly renter living in it. In the living room, Elton and Matthew continue to debate whose house it is. Matthew asks how much Elton thinks the house is worth. Elton tells him $2 million or $3 million. And Matthew says, yeah, well, he paid two point something. He can't remember exactly for the house and everything in it. And he doesn't like getting ripped off. Elton asks if Matthew wants some money. Like I could write you a check. Sounding insulted, Matthew says he doesn't want money. He wants is his house. Look, you can take anything you want, Elton says. I don't want to take nothing. It's all mine anyway. I just don't know why this is happening to me. I mean, I would do anything for these kids and this little lady here. She's had a rough life, man, and I promise them better. I can help you out. Start talking. Well, you say you don't want any money. You don't know what I want, buddy. It becomes increasingly clear as this conversation continues. Then neither does Matthew. Not exactly, anyway. Elton repeatedly asks to be allowed to put on his clothes and go to the bathroom, and is eventually permitted to do so. You wouldn't dare get a gun, would you? Matthew says. That wouldn't be safe. No, I would never do that. But what Elton does get from the bathroom is Xanax. He swallows two of them before it comes out. They come in very handy over the next 7 hours. Back in the living room, the kids are starting to become uncomfortable, and maybe this is not their house. Tabitha comes up and whispers something to Matthew, who turns to Elton and says, she might have to take a road trip. Do what? When they leave the house, for he doesn't have a clue where, he and Matthew in Matthew's black Chevrolet Tahoe, Tabitha's kids follow them in Elton's pickup. Elton is understandably sick with fear. Matthew pulls off Highway 280, where he's forced to slow in front of a McDonald's, and Elton drives the Trump out of the Tahoe. Matthew reaches over one big arm and grabs him by the shirt, tearing off some buttons. Pulling Elton's into his, a horrifying different Matthew than Elton has seen before, says, if you do that again, I will kill you and your family. As Matthew drives out into the countryside, Elton tries to keep track of where they are now, but there are too many turns into back roads with no signs. Matthew finally turns into a field with a couple of trailers and stops at the second trailer back. Behind them, Elton's Toyota. Home sweet home, Matthew says. The trailer is in Rimlap, a population of 2,624. Its name's in the backward spelling of Palmer, a family that lives here. Beside the trailer, Tabitha and Matthew lead Elton into their bedroom, where an air conditioner is cranked up and bras hanging from the light fixtures. The three of them sit on the unmade sheetless bed. Matthew gets down to business. So tell me the truth now, bub. How much money can you wire into our account today? Elton does tell him the truth, $500,000. Matthew and Tabitha stare at him for a moment and says, okay, we want half of it. Fine, Elton says, but I'm cold in here. Can we go somewhere else to talk about it? You bet, Matthew says, and leads Elton to the trailer where the kids are playing a video game to a small deck facing the rear of the field. Without another human being in sight, the only seating on the deck is an old wheelchair to which Matthew motions Elton. Then he takes his seat on a truck tire. Matthew offers Elton a joint, which Elton declines, and they discuss the best way for Elton's money to become Matthew's. After a few minutes, Tabitha joins them. She sits on a stool that she's brought from the kitchen and says, "Where are we at?" Matthew tells her that Elton will call his banker and explain he is buying a farm property from Tabitha and needs the banker to transfer the purchase price of $250,000 into her account ASAP. "Let's do it," she says. Matthew still has Elton's phone, and Tabitha tells Elton to use hers to call the bank. She gives him her account and routing numbers, and Elton makes a call on speakerphone as directed. The banker tells him he sent the request to the wiring department, and someone will call Elton back in an hour, once the transfer is completed. Here they are now, the three of them, with the deal more or less straight between them, except for one important detail. "You're going to take me home as soon as the money is in the account, right?" Elton asks. And Matthew says yes, they will take him home then. "Shake on it," Elton says, and they do just that. Would you believe Matthew? Doesn't that situation shout that no, they will not take you home, but far more practically dispose of you in some gruesome way? And wouldn't you wonder if there was anything you could do here and now to make that gruesome disposal less likely? The world as experienced by a particular animal, as distinct as perceived universe, is called the animal's umwelt. It is hard to imagine two men with less similar umwelts than Matthew Amos and Amos Burke, than Matthew Amos Burke and Elton B. Stevens, Jr. But I believe that while in the trailer deck, Elton sensed on some present primordial level that the more he could bond to his unwelt Matthews, the better chances of his survival. Over the next 2 hours, Elton directs the conversation in the lingua franca of the Deep South, cars, hunting, and fishing. The three of them sit there talking of the subject from a stool, a wheelchair, and a truck tire, as comfortable as three hog farmers at the end of a long workday. "What are you all going to do with the money?" Elton asks Tabitha. She jumps off the stool, takes back her phone belt, and starts thumbing through her for graphs. "Here," she says, "this is our dream house. Now we can buy it for us and the kids." The photo shows a white-story, five-bedroom house near Rimlap, with plenty of lands for horses and cows. His old career in real estate kicking in, Elton asks what the owners are asking. As it happens, the figure is around $250,000. And now, says Tabitha, they can have it. "No, no, no," Elton tells her. She and Matthew don't want to pay the full price or in cash. What they want to do is to offer about $190,000, then put down 20% of whatever figure they get for the house for in cash and mortgage the rest. Taking back Tabitha's phone, he does the mortgage calculations for them, coming up with payments of about $700 a month. This nearly tuckles the couple to death. It's where we are going to get married," Matthew says, "and you know what? We want you to come to the wedding." "Yeah," Tabitha says. "You want to be a pallbearer." When the word finally arrives on Tabitha's phone that the $250,000 have been transferred to her bank account, she and Matthew are as happy as kids on Christmas morning. "Now you're going to take me home and not hurt me, right?" Elton says to Matthew, and Matthew says yes. On the drive back into Birmingham, Elton is more frightened than any other time during the day. Matthew and Tabitha have the money. How can it possibly benefit to set free the only person who knows how they got it? It's not until they turn on an expressway headed back toward Mr. B. House that he begins to believe that, unlikely as it seems, they might be doing exactly that. It helps that Matthew mentions without much heat that of course he would have to kill Elton and his family if Elton tells the police what happened to him. They arrive at Mr. B.'s house around 3:45 p.m. Elton gets out of the pickup, as does Matthew. "We're going to borrow your truck for a couple of weeks," Matthew says. "Just keep it," Elton says, and starts to walk to the front. "Come here," Matthew says. "Come here." But Elton walks back to the pickup. Matthew hands Elton his phone. Then he gives him a hug and drives away. Fairly boiling with adrenaline, Elton leaps into the house. He sits down on the sofa and pulls out his phone. If I were writing a fictional screenplay of this story, I would be tempted to end it with a cutaway from Elton staring at his phone to this. "Lawn outside a white two-story house from near Rimlap, Alabama, day. A wedding reception is going on. White tents, caterers, a band playing, a festive wedding of about 100 people. Angle on. The man who is preparing for the reception, Elton B. Stevens, Jr., rises from his seat at a linen-draped table with champagne bottles up to host. Angle on. The smiling newlyweds across the table from him. But this is not a movie. Elton calls his older brother. No answer. And no answer from either of his sisters. He gets into a Maserati and drives to the big house on the hill that used to be his and is now the home of his wife, from whom he separated, and their son. She is at home, and Elton tells her what has happened. From her house, he also reaches one of her sisters, who, after getting on the phone with Elton, calls Ashley Curry, a retired FBI agent who had worked for the family business. He tells Elton's sister that the police and the FBI must be notified, and he will do it. But they told Elton they would kill him if he do that. Oh, they all say that, he says. By mid-afternoon the following day, Matthew and Tabitha were under arrest. Using GPS tracking on Elton's phone, the Birmingham police had little trouble locating the trailer in Remlap. When she called the cruisers pulled into the field, Tabitha grabbed up all of Elton's watches, guns, credit cards, and the like, and started frantically hiding them. By the time police entered the trailer, she realized she hadn't needed to do that, since the story she was busy inventing for herself would provide a reason for the stolen good presents. The very short version of Tabitha's long-tape statement? She worked a part-time job as a maid. She didn't. For Mr. Stevens. On one occasion, Mr. Stevens had gotten tucky and intimate with her. He hurt me, she said, and I wanted to hurt him back. So yesterday she drove up to the house Mr. Stevens was renting to do just that. But Matthew, who wanted no part of revenge, had followed her, and in a three-way confrontation with Mr. Stevens urged her to let it alone, baby. They decided they would just take their story to the police. Panicked by the prospect, Mr. Stevens had given them the credit and debit cards, guns, watches, and a camera. He had given them all of that, plus his truck, plus his $250,000 he had wired into her account to keep them from turning him over to the police. So she said Matthew didn't have anything to do with it. In the meantime, Matthew was giving his statement to a detective named Cameron Beadle. It was very different from Tabitha's. Matthew insisted he and Tabitha just took an early morning cruise up to Mr. B's house to pay visit to an old friend of Tabitha's, Mr. Stevens, who might have been her sugar daddy at one time. During their nice, friendly visit, Matthew happened to mention a house they had wanted to buy, but their loan application had been turned down. And Mr. Stevens said, "You know what? I'm just going to give that house y'all for all y'all's wedding present, and I'll just transfer the money for it into y'all's account." "So," said Detective Beadle, "you're saying there was no forced entry, no kidnapping, no theft of property, and no extortion, correct?" "Correct," Matthew said. "None of that." "Mr. Stevens just a real friendly old guy," Matthew explained, "who maybe felt bad about maybe once being Tabitha's sugar daddy, and now he wanted to help them out." "Okay," Detective Beadle said. He had something he wanted Matthew to listen to. "You ready?" "Yeah." And Detective Beadle played Matthew the Snore Lab recording. Matthew Amos Burke is serving 17 years in a federal prison in Kentucky on charges of kidnapping, bank fraud, and conspiracy to commit bank fraud. On the same charges, Tabitha Nicole Hodges is serving 12 years at a women's prison in Alabama. It may be difficult to wrap one's heads around this crown, but Elton Stevens' attorney, Tommy Spina, who has defended every imaginable type of criminal for 45 years, summed up the crime this way. "You've heard of blue-collar crime and white-collar crime. Well, this was a no-collar crime." Left to our own devices, American adults check their phones 144 times a day. That's at up to 4 hours of screen time, which means we spend 2 months out of the year on our phones. That I really believe. And with that, we're going to switch over to Consumer Reports. Last week, we were talking about the different things to get around more town more easily. We talked about bicycles, walking canes, helmets for bicycles, and how to track your health at home was the next thing as well. Blood pressure monitor, fitness trackers, cholesterol tests. Here's what you need and what you can skip. And we did the thing with the blood pressure monitor, thermometer, fitness tracker, bathroom scales, and how often you should see a doctor. So, but what can you skip? Some test devices that sound like they could be helpful might not actually provide you with the information that's useful. Sleep tracker. Various apps and gadgets let you measure everything from sleep duration and sleep quality to snoring. But a 2019 review questioned the accuracy of these devices. Research also suggests they can stress you out and make it harder to sleep. "I have seen a lot of worry from them," says Hockman, a Los Angeles internist. "They're supposed to motivate you to adopt better sleep habits, not cause anxiety." Cholesterol test. These home blessed measures, these home blood tests measure what's called total cholesterol. Some also check your levels of the HDL, good cholesterol, and triglycerides, a type of fat found in your blood. They can be about as accurate as the test your doctor uses, according to the Food and Drug Administration. They do vary from brand to brand, so the FDA recommends checking the accuracy listed on a test package. But most of the time, it simply doesn't make sense to do this test at home. Unlike a home test, a doctor-ordered cholesterol test is usually covered by insurance, says Goldberg at the NYU Grossman School of Medicine, and you need to go over the results with your doctor in any event. Menopause test. At-home hormone t- test can check either your urine for levels of reproductive hormone called FSH or your blood for levels of other female hormones such as estradiol. But they only measure hormones in one snapshot of town, Furst says. When you're going through menopause, your hormones may be all over the place. You won't get an accurate picture. Plus, you can work with your doctor on potential treatments based on your symptoms alone. Genetic test. These saliva tests are sometimes marketed as a way to assess your risk of Alzheimer's disease, cancer, and more. But most are not regulated by the FDA, so you might not be able to trust the findings. And some offer results only about gene variants common in specific ethnic groups. So depending on your background, they may be worthless for you, says Joy Hartson-Hadle, MS, past president of the National Society of Genetic Counselors. The test can also provide a false sense of security or prevail you into an unnecessary state of alarm. Plus, there are significant privacy concerns when you send your saliva off in the mail. You might not know where or how your data is used. Such testing needs to be done with a genetic counselor to help you properly interpret results, Hadle says. Checking the claims on home health products. Whether you're shopping for a thermometer or a do-it-yourself diagnostic test for urinary tract infections, it can be hard to know what is useful and what may be misleading, defective, or a waste of money. Some key tips before you click Buy Now. Be wary of FDA-registered and FDA-certified claims. Phrases like these may imply that a product has undergone a Food and Drug Administration review. But the first term just means a manufacturer registers the facility where it's made yearly with the FDA. Not that the product has been approved or cleared. As for the second claim, the agency doesn't certify products or issue registration certificates. Search the FDA's site. You can find out whether the device has been cleared by the agency by checking its device database. Search for devices at FDA to find it. This means a company has demonstrated that the device is comparable to a product the FDA already has carefully vetted. You can do the same for home medical tests through FDA's database at home tests. Search for IVD lab test database. Enter a term such as the type of test, for example, urinary tract infection, its name or the company, then click search. Check for a CLIA certification. For at-home tests, you send back to a lab to be analyzed, such as a genetic test. Check the label or online description to make sure the lab is CLI certified. This means that the test meets federal quality standards and the lab undergoes regular inspections. Consider that a bare minimum. And talk to your medical provider. They can help you think through a potential purchase or may know of an easier, less expensive way to get the answers you're interested in. For example, your doctor could order a test to check your cholesterol levels rather than have you buy one yourself. Or they may have a specific recommendations about home monitoring devices, so you're not left to comparison shop on your own. Credit cards with the best perks. The right cards can put hundreds, even thousands of dollars back in your pocket. There are more than 1,000 credit cards out there that offer rewards. With these, you get something in return each time you spend. Usually cash back and sometimes points or miles, as with airline-branded cards. But how do you choose the best one or two or maybe three or more for you? If you carry balances on your credit cards, this is not a question even worth asking, because any rewards you earn will be offset by interest charges and late fees. But if you pay in full every month, look for cards that most generously reward you for being the kind of charging you usually do. Do you spend heavily on travel, dining out, entertainment, on gas or groceries? Check out the cards below, organized by spending styles, to find the ones that reward you most. Road Tripper. If a large chunk of your monthly expenses go to gas and related road trip charges, and you usually visit just one company's stations, you may be tempted to get its rewards card. For example, ExxonMobil Smart Card saves you 12 cents a gallon on premium fuel, 10 cents on other grades. The drawback is you are typically limited to earning rewards at only ExxonMobil locations, says Nick Ewan, senior editorial director for travel site The Points Guy. Want more choice? Then consider a Wells Fargo Autograph Card. It charges no annual fee and offers an unlimited 3 points earned on each dollar spent on gas and electric vehicle charging stations, as well as for parking, tolls, garages, train rips, subway taxis, limousines, and ferries. It offers the same 3 points earned on hotels, car rentals, flights, restaurants, and streaming services, which include Apple TV, Disney, and Hulu. There are no reward limits. If you belong to a warehouse club, you can earn generous rewards at gas stations with its credit card. For example, Costco Anywhere Visa gives you 4% cash back on gas and EV charging at any eligible station up to $7,000 annually. Plus, you can get 3% back at restaurants, car rentals, airfare, hotels, cruise lines, and trip booked through Costco Travel. 1% on other purchases. Basic annual membership of the club is $60. And I'll give an example of that. I have a BJ's card, guess, and I figured out the difference in price between the gas at BJ's and at a standard gas station. In 3 months, I have more than paid my fees with the savings on gas. Club Sam's Club MasterCard gives 5% cash back on gas up to $6,000 annually, 1% back on additional gas spending, plus 3% back on dining and takeout, one on purchases at Sam's Club and elsewhere. Basic annual membership is $50. The BJ's One MasterCard, which I have, nets you 10 cents off a gallon of BJ's gas for its $55 membership, plus 3% cash back on most BJ's purchases, 1.5% south elsewhere. And it's amazing the difference in price. Gas here right now at most retail stations is about $3.50 a gallon. At BJ's with the discount, it's $3.09 a gallon. I just got some today. That's how I know. Discount Seeker. If you're someone who appreciates having a card that partners with large and varying array of retailers, often high-end, for special shopping discounts, consider a U.S. Bank Shopper Cash Rewards Visa Signature Card. You earn 6% cash back at two retailers you choose each quarter, up to $15 each quarter, 1.5% cash back on additional charges. Retailers recently included Apple, Amazon, Chewy, Crate & Barrel, IKEA, Lululemon, Nordstrom, Restoration Hardware, and Williams-Sonoma. You can also get 3% back each quarter up to $15 on an everyday purchase category you choose, including wholesale clubs, gas and EV charging stations, or utility bills, then 1.5% cash back on other purchases. You also earn 1.5% cash back when you shop at over 1,100 online retailers through its shopping portal. There's no annual fee for the first year, then it's $95. If you have a PayPal account, the PayPal Cashback MasterCard gives you 3% unlimited cash back at more than a million merchants online and in stores, plus 2% back anywhere the MasterCard is accepted. Fans of the Simon Malls Mills at Premium Outlets should consider the Simon American Express card. It provides 5% cash back for purchases at its more than 200 locations and 1% back on other purchases up to $10,000 annually. Stores include Althea, Armani, Brooks Brothers, and Polo Ralph Lauren. Special perks you might not know about. Credit cards you currently have could have perks you're not even aware of. Specifics on your card, check your issuer's website or app, and call the number on the back. Some possibility. Cell phone insurance. This could keep you from having to pay the full cost of a replacement phone if yours is stolen or damaged and you've exhausted other insurance you hold, i.e. homeowners, renters, and automobile. You have to use the card to pay your phone bill. MasterCard offers cell phone insurance with most World and World Elite cards, and American Express offers it with several of its premium cards. It's included with all Wells Fargo consumer cards. Typically, the card will pay a set amount per interest, generally $600 to $800, often in two or three claims a year, after you pay a $25 to $100 deductible. Extended warranty coverage. Many cards extend the manufacturer's warranty by a year if you use the card to buy an eligible item. My wife bought an expensive electric toothbrush with her Amex card, and it broke 6 months after the manufacturer's warranty expired, says Nguyen, senior editorial director for the travel site The Points Guy. But you got the replacement cost credited back. Price protection. If you buy an item and within a certain time find it advertised for less, with this perk you can file a claim asking to refund the difference. Reimbursement caps vary by card. For example, the Wells Cargo Visa Signature Credit Card tops out at $250 per item and up to $1,000 per year if you find an eligible item with 60 days of the original purchase date. Purchase protection. This can insure certain goods against theft, accidental damage, or a limited time after you buy them. The coverage amount and the duration of the protection differ by cards. The No Annual Fee Chase Freedom Flex card, for example, covers new purchases for 120 days for damage or theft up to $500 per claim and $50,000 per account. Rewards cards with high annual fees may provide more protection. For example, Chase Sapphire Reserve, which charges a $550 annual fee, provides coverage up to $10,000 per claim, up to $50,000 per year with 120 days of purchase. Car rental coverage. Programs vary, but generally you have to pay for your rental car with a car that has coverage and decline the insurance offered by the rental car company. The coverage that most credit cards offer, typically for damage or theft of the rental car, kicks in after your personal auto insurance pays. Are you a culture lover? Does a chunk of your credit card charges go to tickets for theatrical and musical events? Each month, the City Custom Cash Card gives holders 5% back on the eligible spending category of their choice, one of which is live entertainment. You can earn up to $6,000 back a year on concerts, live sporting events, live theatrical productions, amusement parks, and orchestra performances, and there's no annual fee. If you'd like to have early access, Capital One gives cardholders pre-sale tickets to concerts and theatrical shows, including some on Broadway, wine and food festivals, and James Beard Foundation tastings across the country. It also offered pre-sale tickets to the Taylor Swift Eras Tour. It's Capital One's Saver One offer, unlimited 3% cash back on entertainment, which include ticket purchases made at movie theaters, sporting events, live theater, amusement parks, tourist attractions, aquariums, zoos, dance halls, pool halls, and bowling alleys. Saver One has no annual fee. If you spend enough on culture events to cover a $95 annual fee, the Capital One Saver has similar rewards program, but provides 4% cash back on entertainment charges. Another option, Amex cardholders get to pre-sale access to live theater, concerts, sporting events, dining experiences, and more. For example, cardholders were recently offered advance tickets to Coachella, the U.S. Open, the Grand Prix, and Carrie Underwood's Las Vegas show. All Bank of America cardholders can take advantage of its Museum on Us program. It partners with 225 cultural institutions across the U.S., mostly museums, to provide free general admission during the first full weekend of every month. Are you an avid traveler? If you're super loyal to one airline, it might make sense to get their card, since they can offer perks like free check bags and seat upgrades, said Ted Rossman, senior Indian industry analyst at Bankrate.com. But if you're looking for a card that offers access to airport lounges, upgrades at fancy resorts, passes for early boarding, first dibs for high-end restaurant reservations, and so on, there are other options. These cards tend to have high annual fees, but when used wisely, they can save you hundreds of dollars a year, if not more. Capital One Venture X has a $395 annual fee, but every year you get $300 credit for travel purchases if you book flights, hotels, or rental cars through Capital One Travel. You also get 10 miles per dollar spent booking those hotels and rental cars, 5 miles per dollar spent to book flights, plus 2 miles on all of the charges. You'll get 10,000 bonus miles, equal to $100 toward travel every year, starting on your first anniversary. The card provides up to $100 credit for every 4 years for global entry or TSA pre-check, and unlimited access for you and two guests to 1,300-plus lounges worldwide from Priority Pass, Plaza Premium Group, and Capital One. You also get 10 miles per dollar spent when you use its premier collection service to book luxury hotels, resorts, and spas around the world through Capital One, plus up to $100 experience credit used during your stay. Capital One miles could also be transferred to 15 airline and 3 hotel partners. It recently offered a bonus of 75,000 miles if you spend $4,000 in the first 3 months. The even pricier Chase Sapphire Reserve is $550 a year, but the first $300 you spend on travel annually is credited back to you. Then you get 5 points on flights and 10 points on hotels and car rentals when you use your card through Chase Travel. You get 3 points per dollar spent on eligible dining, delivery services, and takeout. There's also free access to 1,300 airport lounges worldwide, up to 2 guests, including Chase Sapphire Lounge by the club and Priority Pass lounge locations. And you can transfer your points to leading airline and hotel loyalty programs at a 1-to-1 value. The card also provides up to $75,000 for theft and collision damage for rental cars, trip cancellation insurance up to $10,000 per person and $20,000 per trip, and trip reimbursement for travel delays of more than 6 hours or that require an overnight stay, including reimbursement of up to $500 for lodging and meals. You also get up to $3,000 per passenger for lost or damaged luggage, plus passenger delay insurance up to $100 per day for up to 5 days. And you get emergency and medical and dental benefits, roadside assistance, and emergency evacuation coverage. Its initial bonus was recently 60,000 points if you spent 4,000 on purchases in the first 3 months. Big food shopper. We all buy groceries, but if the supermarket items are especially budget item for you, it pays to be rewarded for it. You'll get 6% cash back annually on top of the $6,000 worth of groceries bought in the U.S. supermarkets with the Blue Cash Preferred card from American Express. It's free the first year and $95 annually after that. You also get an unlimited 6% back on select streaming services and an unlimited 3% on gas, rideshare services, tolls, parking, subways, ferries, trains, and taxis. Another possibility, this one is no annual fee, is the AAA Daily Advantage Visa Signature Credit Card, which pays 5% cash back on groceries at supermarkets and 3% at wholesale stores and gas stations, and will pay up to $500 a year in combined rewards. More of an online food shopper? The Capital One Walmart Rewards Card will pay 5% cash back on orders placed at Walmart.com for no annual fee, and also pay 5% cash back on in-store purchases for the first 12 months when you use your card at Walmart Pay. Can you have too many credit cards? If you like to keep things simple, one or two no-annual-fee cards that reward your main spending styles may be right for you, says Nick Ewan, the points guy, a travel website. But if you're game to invest some energy in maximizing rewards across multiple cards, we're talking three or four or more, to cover more types of spending, you may find the additional savings to be significant. Signing up for additional cards is more likely to help, not hurt your credit score. That's because when credit is extended to you, your debt-to-credit ratio decreases. And that has a big impact on your FICO credit score. There's also a need to cancel no-fee card accounts that no longer fit your needs. Simply stop using them. But if a card has an annual fee, call the issuer to check its website to see if it has a no-fee card that fits your current needs, says Ted Rosman of Bankrate.com. If you switch card with the same issuer, it usually won't have an impact on your credit score. If you don't and you decide to cancel a card, your credit score will rebound in a couple of months if you pay your bills properly. Now we're going to CR's Ultimate Guide to Home Cleanup. Spring cleaning time is here. If only our homes could take care of themselves. But those dust bunnies that seem to appear out of nowhere don't just vanish on their own. Clothes and dishes pile up at an alarming rate and they sit there waiting for you to wash them. Weeds seemingly sprout up on your lawn overnight, requiring you to whack them away. There's no getting around it. Keeping your place in top shape can be exhausting. But the right tools make it easier, and sometimes less pricey options actually perform better according to our testers. What's more, innovative upgrades have streamlined many chores. SteamMops eliminate the need for carrying a heavy, messy bucket, and they can get floors really clean. Battery-powered lawn tours can save you on gas and maintenance, but how to pick the best gear? On the next 23 pages, which we may not make it all the way through, we reveal the secrets to shopping for everything you need to make your place look great. And they've got a picture here of a steam mop and of a weed whacker. Keeping rugs, carpets, and floors clean. Canisters and upright vacuums. Expert tip, even with a HEPA filter, a vacuum can still emit dust. So before you consider buying a model, check out how it did in our clean emissions test and make sure it received an adequate score. How to shop. These models have the power and versatility to handle a range of tasks, from keeping carpets and hard surface floors dirt-free, dusting shelves and curtains with serious suction. The best are able to reach the dirt buried inside the fibers of rugs and carpets and the grit nestled in the cracks of hardwood floors. And they do so far better than stick and rheobatic models can. That means fewer passes to get areas truly debris-free. How many canisters and uprights now come with HEPA filters that keep most of the dust from escaping from the machine after suctioning, so you're not breathing in the particles you just removed? Which type is right for you? Choose an upright if you have more carpeting than bare floors, because the full weight of the vacuum sits directly over the power brush. You can more easily push it into the carpet pile to reach deep down. Uprights are also more compact and easier to store. But go with a canister if you have mostly bare floors. They excel on hard surfaces and at reaching dirt along four edges because they're safer on stairs. Both types are available in bagged and bagless versions. Bag models can be neater because you just toss out the bag instead of dumping dust from a bin into the trash, which can leave you with a dust cloud. As you chop, check the hose and cord length to make sure it will reach around your rooms. Note the vacuum's attachments, hoses, and crevice cleaners are standard. A longer extension ward and a soft brush come in handy for hard-to-reach spots in upholstery. what to avoid. Some lightweight metals don't have the power to clean anything but low-power rugs and carpets. It says choose a heavier vacuum with a good handling score. And here they have a picture of the Miele Complete C3 Martin. It doesn't say what it costs. But the listing runs anywhere from $1,000 to $1,300 for the Miele Complete C3, which is what they have pictured here. Whoa, $1,300. There's a whole bunch of these, but I'm not going to run through them all. Stick handheld and robotic vacuums. If you have a larger home and still want the convenience of a cordless stick vac, it's particularly important to pick one that has a longer runtime, comes with a second battery, or has a battery you can replace as the first one wears out. How to shop. If you live in a small space without much carpet, or you want a lightweight vacuum to handle minor messes, dusting a floor on an example after baking, for example, considering a stick vacuum. Cordless models can give you more freedom of movement, but you'll have to find a place for the charger. Many can be hung on a wall. Battery runtimes vary. Compare them by looking at our ratings. Also, our members have reported problems with batteries that lose their charge over time. So pick a stick that comes with two batteries or a battery that can be replaced. Handhelds are even easier to grab for a quick cleanup. Take a look at the removal dust container before you buy. Make sure that it will hold about the equivalent of a couple cups of cereal. Otherwise, you'll have to empty it repeatedly as you clean. If you're looking for one for your car, make sure that the nozzle will fit between the seats or that the vac has a tool that will. If you want some help light vacuuming, a robotic vacuum could do the trick. But most don't have enough suction to tackle embedded dirt. Make sure you have space for an out-of-the-way spot for its charging dock, which could take up a couple of square feet. Look at the Gavination score in our ratings, which tells you how well a model avoids obstacles and covers a room. And if you plan on using the Wi-Fi feature, which allows you to do things like adjust cleaning sessions, check the data privacy and data security scores. What to avoid? Don't be tempted by stick vacs that cost under $100. They tend to have much power or battery life. Carpet cleaners. How to shop. You could rent a machine or hire a pro to deep clean your carpets. It's more cost-effective to buy your own cleaner. It will pay for itself after about 6 uses. When choosing a model, first consider your home's layout. An apartment or a one-story house probably won't require one with a particularly long hose. But if you have stairs, a long hose will help you reach the top step while leaving the machine at the bottom. That's important because a carpet cleaner weighs 10 to 20 pounds before you even filled it with cleaning agent and water. Some carpet cleaners have an own tank with 2 chambers, one for fresh cleaning solution, the other for dirty water. While other models have 2 separate tanks, we found that models with 2 tanks are easier to use. Even better, some models have dispensers that add the cleaning agent into clean water, so you don't have to measure out the solution yourself. Some machines also come with attachments for upholstery, pet beds, and more. For the best results, CR's pros advise vacuuming before you start using your carpet cleaner. This eliminates loose dirt and dust first. What to avoid? Don't need to match the brand of your cleaning agent to that of your machine, especially if another brand offers a product that's less expensive. Read the label on the cleaning agent. If your machine's model is listed, it's fine to use. Also note that all carpets can withstand machine cleaning. Check the manuals for your website for care instructions. Not following those guidelines could damage your carpet and void the warranty. Carpet cleaners are heavy and can be hard to move around. If possible, try out models you're considering in the store and be sure to handle them comfortably. Mopping your floors. It's enough to mop board floors once a month. High traffic, high mess areas might need more attention. If you have laminate or tile, a steam mop will streamline the task. But don't use one on wood because moisture can seep into the crevices and cause damage. Robotic mops offer a gentler touch but can't provide a deep clean. Steam mops. How to shop. Steam mops let you skip the bucket and mess of a traditional mop. Just fill the mop's reservoir with water, press a button, and you'll soon have clean floors with a quick street-dry finish. Although, despite what you have heard, a mop won't necessarily get hot enough to actually sterilize the floor, especially with just a quick pass. Match your mop with your home. Opt for a model with a longer cord if you don't have convenient placed outlets. Look for one with a swivel head if you have tight spaces, or a detachable head if you'd like to steam clean drapes and upholstery. What to avoid? Skip models that require pumping the handle to produce steam. You can buy similarly priced mops that do that work for you. Robotic mops. How to shop. These machines pass over floors but not carpet with a damp pad. Some have spinners, and these perform best, according to our testers. Others also work as a vacuum, switching between the two functions automatically when they sense a change from hard floor to carpet, or according to how you program the connected app. Remember, combo models don't always vacuum and mop equally well. You'll still need to get a dedicated machine for heavy-duty vacuuming. Combo options are also pricier. If you have mostly uncarpeted floors, you might not need one at all. And some models empty the dirty liquid and fill the tank with clean liquid. Others require you to do it yourself. To avoid that added chore, check the features. What to avoid? Models with small tank capacities require frequent refilling. Tanks that hold 200 to 4,000 milliliters, most people do well with something in between. Robotic maps can be expensive. While they start around $180, many cost hundreds more and all the way up to $1,400. For top performers with advanced features, expect to pay around $500 or more. How about we close out with a better deal? Headphones. Sennheiser TrueSport Wireless for $150 or JLab Audio Buds Air for $50. Both headphones have a very good sound. The price Sennheisers come with a second set of ear tips that enable less noise isolation so you can hear passing traffic while wearing them outside and have a longer battery life. But if you mostly listen indoors and don't mind recharging after a few hours of use, consider the JLab Audio pair at one-third the cost. And then a little kitty literature. As pet owners know, dogs write in limericks, cats in poetry. Here are examples of feline verse from the book, Oh, It's You, Love Poems by Cats. And then, one day, a future day, when I'm not around, you will sit, you will fret, you will get low, then you will realize, oh God, I bet they're in the food pantry chewing on the roast chicken Raymond packs again, and you will find me once more. Be here, be present. I don't know how much time we've had. I'm not sure how much time is left. I only know that in my head is stuck, presently stuck in some shopping bag handles. So if you could get me out of here, that would really be great. Add a couple of quotable quotes. They say that success changes a person, but I think it actually makes you more of who you really are. That's Barbra Streisand, EGOT winner. My only remaining addictions are toothpicks and self-improvements. Ryan Phillip. Hard work is my preferred language. I try to speak it fluently. Chris Paul, basketball player. My father would invite everybody for a Sunday paella once a month. My mother was always like, what happens if more people show up? My dad would say, we add more rice to the pan. Jose Andres, a chef. And we have about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next week, and thanks so much for listening.